Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of HP Critical. It's a podcast where my friends and I talk all things gaming. My name is Drell, and I'm joined by Brandon.
What's up, people?
And Gabe.
Good evening.
So it's been
back.
A while.
He's back.
Oh, yeah. Gabe's back. Christy's gone, though, unfortunately. It's all someone comes back and someone leaves. Unfortunately, the last podcast episode just didn't work at all. I'm just now letting Brandon know that I couldn't use it. So, yeah, unfortunately. Brandon and I had some pretty good conversation that's gonna just be lost to the ether. But that's okay, because we're back, and it is the saddest Black History Month of the past couple of years. It has been very dry and silent and sad. And the world is sad. But you know what makes everyone happy? Oh, yeah.
Final Fantasy VII Rebirth makes people happy.
That's what makes people happy. And by people, I mean me. And you know what? There's a black guy in it, so I'll take it.
That's what I was going to say. Barrett's coming on the last day of February, the overtime of February, since we are in a leap year. He is coming in clutch to save
us. A little plug for myself, actually. By the time that you guys are hearing that, never mind. You'll find it on the interwebs. Quick, how have you guys been?
Oh, man. I'm not even sure, since you said the last podcast didn't even go out. I don't know how long it's been since y'all last heard what my updates, but it's been a very busy last few weeks for me. When I have free time, I have been playing Persona 3 Reloaded and Mario vs. Donkey Kong, as well as a shit ton of other demos that have been coming out because of not only PlayStation, but that Reading Partner Direct. They dropped like 4 demos, bro. I've only played
one. Unicorn Overlord is great.
I'm going to try that soon. Like, it's one of the many demos that are out now. But yeah, that's what's been up with me.
We still haven't played Foam Stars yet, and I am a beast at Foam Stars.
We have not. I have played Foam Stars. I actually quite enjoy it.
Foam Stars is 3v3, right?
No. 4v4.
4v4, homie.
Bro, we got 3 right here.
Are we quitting this podcast and playing Foam Stars?
Absolutely. Good night, guys. Thank you for everything. We'll see you next week.
Well, we tried, people, but we all collectively realized that Foam Stars has not been played. So.
Actually, you know what? We can play Foam Stars if we hurry up. So let's quickly go through this podcast. Not because we don't want you guys to, you know, have all the gaming news that you need, but we just want to go play video games because we can't talk about them if we don't play them. And speaking of playing video games, as Brandon mentioned, by the time you guys are listening to this, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, the best game ever made of all time, is coming out, and I will be playing it and hopefully providing some thoughts on it by the next podcast. However, I think I won't get my game until the day after release, unfortunately, because apparently someone's racist and don't want to give me my game during Black History Month. My package isn't coming until March 1st, unfortunately. But it is coming.
So Barrett can't save you. That's crazy.
He can't save me. What'd you say, Gabe?
Why don't you just pre-order it at a store?
Because the only place that you could get the collector's edition with the Sephiroth statue was through the Square Enix store.
I hate it when Square Enix
Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, of course.
That's crazy. If you had gotten on the day of, you could have gotten the game, you could have gotten to Coral, so you could really celebrate Barrett.
Yeah, if you're a real fan, you would have gotten 2 versions of the game. You would have gotten the in-store game to get it on the day of release, and you would have gotten the next day with the collector's edition.
I just got a bonus. Never mind, this is personal information.
That did not help your case.
No, I was going to say something.
That thesis statement just did, like, was not in your favor, sir.
No, so usually what happens is that someone I know will buy... Dang, this is going to sound real sketchy and illegal, so let me switch this up. Usually what will happen... Okay, no, let me tell you another story. So what usually happens is that my lovely boyfriend will buy the digital version of a game, and then I just get to play it until my physical copy comes in. But this time, I think he bought the physical, so I won't be able to play it until my physical version comes in. And that's the story, and I'm sticking to it. Thank you. Persona 3 Reload is out, like you mentioned. Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, one of the best games ever made. If you haven't played it, I talk all the time about how good Like a Dragon is. You should all play Yakuza Like a Dragon. You should all play Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. I spent way too many hours making like my cute little Animal Crossing area. It's like a hotel. It's really great. I just build stuff and catch fish and do nonsense. And I'm so behind on the story that it sucks because I'm going to stop playing everything to play Rebirth on the first. How you been, Gabe?
Exhausted, man. Moving cities, which means moving my stuff, which means driving. But I'm here.
You're here. You're ready to go. It's Black History Month. Oh, I don't think that matters to either of you. All right. Well, oh, no, it does matter to Gabe.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. To Gabe, it matters.
You know, the problem is I'd be forgetting because he's so pale.
That's not nice.
I really do be forgetting because he's so pale. So I wrote something at my job at thegamer.com that's going to come out, and I do talk about black characters in gaming and Final Fantasy specifically, so check that out when it comes out. Whenever. So let's hop into some gaming news so we can go talk about, I mean, play Foam Stars. Raynatus is a game that is coming out. There is an overseas version announcement. Raynatus is finally, it's been revealed that it is coming outside of Japan, so assuming that it is coming to the West. It kind of looks like, so I saw this earlier, and okay, never mind. I'll just read it here. So originally the game was announced exclusively in Japan's Nintendo Partner Direct. It got a lot of attention overseas for its inspiration and similar staff to Final Fantasy Versus 13. So I've seen it. Brandon, I know you've seen it. How do we feel about the localization being confirmed and the game itself?
Yeah, so, you know, that Nintendo Partner Direct came out, and they had one or two announcements that was pretty cool, but not too long after it came out, obviously, what the internet does was, hey, what did Japan get in their Direct that we didn't? And one of the big highlights was this game called Raynatus that came out of nowhere. It's coming out on both PlayStation 5 as well as Nintendo Switch. Heavily, heavily inspired, but just by, like, look of it, by like what Final Fantasy Versus 13 originally was, what ended up becoming Final Fantasy 15. And those who are a fan of Kingdom Hearts know that there's some influence from there as well. It's very clear that those people had some, they had some visions for that game that didn't quite go the way they wanted to. So they're bringing it back in their own way. And as far as this latest attempt, it's, you know, the gameplay looks very similar. It's a action RPG taking place in this vast metropolis. The scenario, I believe I saw, was being done by Nojima, Kazushige Nojima, and the soundtrack is being done by Yoko Shimura, which is hilarious because she's done the soundtrack for Final Fantasy 15, again, which originally was Versus 13. She's doing this, she has done the soundtrack for the Kingdom Hearts series. Now she's doing the soundtrack for this. So somehow she got involved with all three Versus 13 projects that's not Versus 13, which I think is hilarious. But yeah, people saw that. They were really excited, really hoping for localization. I don't think we're even a full week since the presents, and yay, now they have announced that it is coming overseas. NIS America is doing the English localization, and I believe in other Asian territories being done by Arc System Works. So I'm excited. I think the gameplay looks interesting. I need to see more because, you know, you dangle Verse 13 for me. I'm at least a little interested, but I need to see a little more of the gameplay to make sure, you know, it's actually good. But yeah, I have, optimistic. I'm happy that it got announcement, and it seems like a lot of other people are very happy that it got announced because so many people were scared, because and rightfully so. Like, if it was only in the Japanese Direct, one would assume then it was only planned for a Japanese release. Who knows if the outcry is the reason why they announced this localization so soon, if there was even one planned, but hey, it's coming. Hopefully it's good.
I think the game looks bad and not fun. But I am excited for Yoko Shimomura. But also, I'm just going off of the 2-minute original trailer. It does not look good to me at all.
Yeah, we'll see.
It also feels very, like... Maybe I also might be a little biased here, but it does feel a lot like people keep trying to make this game work that didn't work. It doesn't, and I'm just like, please stop. Like, let it go, let it die. We've already got, you know, the stuff with Kingdom Hearts. Like, it's I am excited for Shimomura's OST, because I'm sure it's gonna be amazing, because it's one of my favorite composers.
Yeah, so if nothing else, but, like, if this game reviews really badly, we can just
listen to the soundtrack
and think about what was.
But it reminds me of like a knockoff Genshin Impact / Honkai Star Rail. Like, it looks very gacha mobile game bad. I would not play this on my PlayStation. I'd probably play it on Switch if I ever played it, but I probably wouldn't play it. Until I see more, it doesn't look good to me.
I do need to see more as well, because I'm not quite as down on it based on that 2-minute thing, but I'm like square. I wouldn't say squarely middle. I'm like a little closer to like the positive, only because again, the people that are working on it, but you know, the gameplay didn't interest me that much either. But we'll see.
Dang, so the gameplay didn't interest you either. You just care because of the people that are working on it?
And because it's inspired by Verse 13. I think it's
so you don't even care about the game. You literally care more about the people and the possible connection of a game you never got than the fact that this game doesn't look good.
That's what I said.
So let's see. That is the problem.
So let's see, is all I gotta say about that.
Good people make bad games sometimes.
This is true.
Oh my god.
Gabe, I have fully acknowledged on this podcast that it could be bad. I literally said like 2 minutes ago, like, hey, if it reviews bad, we can just listen to the soundtrack. No, that could very well happen. This could all be for nothing. Like, this entire conversation could be for nothing, except maybe a good soundtrack. That's the one thing that I refuse to believe would be bad about this game, is the soundtrack.
All right.
We'll see.
Yep. Agreed. So, there was a message from Final Fantasy VII Rebirth creative director Tetsuya Nomura about streaming and posting guidelines for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Let me read it for you guys. The launch of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is nearly here, and with only a few days ago, the live streaming and content sharing guidelines have already been announced, but please allow me to communicate this important request again. When posting anything that strongly relates to the game's story on social media and video sharing sites, I ask that you please make sure to include spoiler warnings so as to not affect the experience of those who have yet to play the game. I would also be very grateful if you could refrain from using any scenes from those vital parts of the story in your video thumbnails. We deliberately did not restrict the record and share functions for any areas in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, as we want you to be able to share and comment on your gameplay experiences. Still, I am making this request to ask for respect towards all the players out there who want to avoid any spoilers until they have personally completed the story. Now, I thought this was very interesting, because I can't remember, and obviously please correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't remember any time where a creative director of a game has just flat out come out and said, hey, please don't spoil this game for other people regarding streaming, like specifically mentioning, like, because yeah, obviously I've heard of them saying, hey, please don't spoil this, but specifically for streaming, specifically for posting thumbnails on your videos, like, it's very specific, because in Final Fantasy VII Remake there were sections that you just couldn't record. The record function did not work, and that was specifically to make sure that the game was not spoiled for people. But I think, you know, the team watches these playthroughs, they've seen people do them, they notice how, like, those playthroughs have really gotten the community together, and so they've decided to allow you to stream and share the entire thing. But a specific request to not do any thumbnails, not to do any spoilers, I think that's great, but my actual question for you guys is, what do you think about devs restricting sections of games for streaming and recording? And what are your thoughts on developers having to consider to do so in our current stream heavy climate?
Oh, to be perfectly clear, I'm very much not a fan of when streaming of this kind of thing gets blocked. I remember back when Persona 5 originally came out, had a very similar thing. Atlas is...
That was bad.
Yeah, Atlas is unfortunately notorious when it comes to restricting people showing footage because of how protective they are of the story, and it's something that a lot of people just frankly don't appreciate. And then, like you brought up the point of Final Fantasy VII Remake. Yeah, I think it was either Chapter 16 or Chapter 17 onwards where you just could not like get gameplay footage at all. And I was like, I don't love that. But, you know, I do think it's a good thing that Rebirth is relaxed on that. So in lieu of using such heavy-handed tactics, are instead just, you know, being very polite and saying, hey, you know, a lot of people have been waiting for this game. They want to see it for themselves. You know, stream it by all means. Have fun with your community. You know, enjoy that. But like, don't spoil it for people. There's a YouTuber out there. I don't know if y'all ever heard of him. Pro Safia Gaming. Homie just straight up throws like big ass spoilers on his thumbnails with any game. Like day one game comes out, it'll be like this game final boss plus ending, and the thumbnail will be said final boss. I'm like, motherfucker. Like, I had to, like, block him because I was just like, I don't want to see this shit on day one of this game coming out. I don't even want that to come up in my recommended. Just, like, absolutely not. Get away from me. I'm trying to enjoy my game. Like, I don't want to have to be restricted from not using you. Like, obviously, I'll be careful of YouTube because people just do that. But, like, you know, I don't want, you know, the first thing I see in my recommended is all I'm trying to say. So, yeah, you know, just asking people to just be a little respectful of the fact that people were waiting. Perfectly fine without restricting them. And it's also unexpected too, because Nomura has been burnt by the community before. Like, there was that Kingdom Hearts 3 leak, I think, that came out, you know, 3 years ago, or not three, but like 2019 is when that game came out. So 5 years ago, damn. Anyway, yeah, when that game came out 5 years ago, people were just out there just like throwing the game out there. And Nomura was like, oh, I'm never going to like do simultaneous releases again. America can't be trusted. Like, the homie was tight. So 5 years later, I'm glad that, you know, now he's relaxed a little bit. Him and the team have relaxed a little bit. Games are going to be fine. It's just, you know, throwing a little warning out there, which is fine. I wish more developers would take this tactic for games that people are waiting for. Let them stream. Just, you know, tell them to be considerate, because some people can't be considerate, you know.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah, thank you. That literally all I thought was, this reminds me of when you are like, when you ask people to not do something and then they do it just because you asked them not to. Like, this is very much like a, oh, he said don't put the ending in a thumbnail, watch this, I'm gonna do that. So I kind of low-key wish that they would go back to, I think what they did before was they had blocked off recording and streaming for a set amount of time and then they allowed it. I think Persona 5 did that as well. I think Remake and Persona 5 both did that.
Yes. However, they never, like, yeah, you're right. They did eventually stop that restriction, but it was never announced. Like, they never said, like, hey, in 3 months, y'all can stream all of Persona 5. They just, you know, there just came a point where that embargo lifted without them really being explicit about it.
But did Remake announce it? I feel like I remember Remake announcing when this happened, but not Persona.
I want to say Remake did and Persona did not.
And I understand why you would want to like not do it, but I'm also of the mind of like not doing it. I guess it's just because it's such a big, highly anticipated game that having it ruined by accidentally scrolling through YouTube, or, you know, having it ruined by Twitter day one, like, those are very viable, you know, outcomes, especially with like such a stream heavy area that we're in, like, right now. Like, it's so hard already to just avoid spoilers. So for something like Rebirth that people know is going to be a big deal, I'm just like, I appreciate it for people that want to stream the whole thing, but I'm also just like, dang, low-key kind of wish that there was a little bit of restrictions as far as whatever. It doesn't matter what I think. What do you think, Gabe?
I mean, I don't know. I'm never a fan of restricting gameplay, because I feel like, you know, if you're making the content, obviously you want all the pieces in it. Like, you know, like, for example, like, I watch Jacksepticeye every now and then. He's based in England, so they got God of War before we did. So like, and obviously him being a content creator, he's going to, you know, he's going to do the entire game. So to me, like, it's thinking like, oh, imagine like I start, cause when it came to God of War, I was like, do I buy the game? Do I spend $70, 60, whatever it was to play the game I might not finish? Cause I didn't finish the first God of War, or, you know, do I just go ahead and watch someone play it? Because I want to know the story. So like, to me, I'm thinking like, oh, if I want to know the story on something, like I want to know it all. I don't want anything to be, you know, to be blocked off. But then at the same time, it's like, I'm thinking about how annoyed I would have been if I was, you know, if Tears of the Kingdom came out and I wasn't able to play it because I was doing something at work, and I, you know, I go on YouTube or Google and I see a spoiler, like, and, you know, and it's like, so I understand it, I get it, but then like, I don't know, like, I it's mean to say, but he's putting a lot of faith into a very shitty human race. Like, a lot of humans can't be bothered to just, you know, they want to be the first one to say something like, oh my God. Like, for example, say in this, in Rebirth, they decide to change it up and they kill Cloud like halfway through instead. And like, there's going to be that handful of people that's going to be like, oh my gosh, I know the game just came out an hour ago, but I've been playing it nonstop. Look what happens. So I don't know. To me, my advice to people is the best practice is, you know, we're already 3 days away. Stop tweeting, stop liking anything that has to relate to Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, because it will slow down your algorithm on that. And just, or even then, just delete your social media apps for 3 days. I mean, go on a three-day cleanse. Fuck it. Because, but it's he made out the message, but he can't control what everybody does. And you know, you're going to have that handful of assholes that's going to try and spoil it. They want to get to that big part before anyone else does, just to say, oh, I got there first. I already knew that.
And it's so hard too, because there are so many content creators like that are preparing for this as well, and ruining moments for them that they don't get to experience it with chat, like on camera, is also a big thing.
No, I was just going to say, like, honestly, the way I predict everything's going to go, it's going to, like, with the message that he put out, I think it's ultimately going to be a net neutral, in that people who are already conscious about not spoiling things are still going to do that. And people who, you know, like Pro Safety Gaming is still going to have that spoiler thumbnail day one. I have no doubt of that. And him and other YouTubers that do that are still going to do that. I think the message is nice, but I ultimately don't think it'll change anything for those that already have that mindset. Maybe it'll change one or two people's minds, like, damn, maybe I won't put that thumbnail. But that's about it. Like, it's not going to have a wide impact.
I think I'm just so annoyed by this specifically because, like, for full disclosure, I know a little bit about Rebirth. Some of it I didn't even want to know. That I already know. So I'm already like, I already know too much. But very big spoilers for anyone who did not play the OG FF7. Stop listening for like 15 seconds now. So there's obviously that big pivotal moment that happens in OG FF7 that everybody knows what I'm talking about. And the big question is, what happens to that character in Rebirth? And I feel like with a game that's this big, it's going to be one of the first things that people spoil. And that is why I think that it shouldn't be allowed to stream until later on. Like, I think they should just do what they did with Remake, because that is just big pivotal plot point moment that they've alluded to a lot, that has been alluded to outside of them and from the development team, etc., etc. And so, like, that is going to be number one big spoiler out there, something that a lot of fans have been speculating about, and it's gonna suck. Like, I really think when you have a game that's so, you know, another example is Last of Us 2, right? For anyone who has not played The Last of Us 2 or who is going to watch the show, there's a really big spoiler that happens fairly early on in that game that was completely ruined for a lot of people. Like, I knew what was going to happen before I even played the game, and I wasn't even paying that much attention. And it does really take away from your experience. Like, when you play through it yourself, you're not going to feel what they intended for you to feel when it comes to playing this game, because it's already been ruined. So I think when you have games that are really, really story heavy like that, it might be worth blocking it off from streaming for a little bit to just let people catch up. Because, you know, people've got lives, people's got jobs. I'll be playing, luckily. I'm privileged enough to be playing the game right after release, but that doesn't mean everybody else will. It's an expensive game. It's going to be $70. People work 40, 50, 60 hour work weeks. You get off. You can only play 3 or 4 hours a day. If that, you got to go to work the next day. You got kids, you got pets. Like, life is different for everyone. So, you know, people that have the advantage to sit home and... All right. Helldivers 2. Unless anyone has anything else to say on that, I'm done. Are we good?
All I was going to say as a little addendum is just like, you know, I just hope that going forward, game developers just are not as heavy-handed with, you know, trying to control the streamers, because I think content, like, to Gabe's point that he mentioned earlier, game content creators are a big part of the game, of a game's marketing, that, you know, maybe the game publishers themselves can't control, but it's important nonetheless. I'll give you a great example. Back in 2013, The Last of Us original was just not on my radar whatsoever. It was just like, you know, a few friends were interested in it. I was like, oh, whatever. And then YouTubers that I used to watch, that unfortunately the channel doesn't really exist anymore, they did a playthrough of The Last of Us. So unfortunately, I did get spoiled at the beginning moment of The Last of Us 1. But I think it ultimately ended up being a positive for me, even though it was, you know, I didn't feel that same when I got to the game myself. I wouldn't have bought that game if it wasn't for them, is what I'm trying to say. Like, I saw how interesting the story was in the first few parts they did, how the gameplay looked. I was like, damn, I need to go get this game. And then straight up, they were on part 4 of their playthrough. I was 15 minutes in their 30-minute video. Pause, a day off, got in my car, went to my Best Buy, bought the game, just started playing it that same day. And I didn't check their playthrough again until I finished the game myself.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying block the whole game.
No, yeah, no, I understand, like, what you're saying. I'm just saying.
They could block, you saying, know, at the 30-minute mark of a 40-hour story. I mean, the 30-hour mark of a 40-hour story, you know, hey, this is going to be a very pivotal moment. We're going to stop recording from here. And if you were that invested to go buy the game, you will have bought the game by then, and you can catch up and see it for yourself, or you just wait a little bit and see how it ends. This, we're talking about a game that's 100 hours. So you have 100 hours worth of streaming that you can do between, like, mini games and side quests and all this other stuff before you get to, you know, that pivotal moment. So I'm not saying block the whole thing.
I know that's what you're saying.
Then you would still be able to do the same thing that you did as The Last of Us.
Yeah, no. The only point I was trying to make with that whole, like, a little mini anecdote was the fact that I'm happy that less heavy-handed techs are being using, and they're, you know, the fact that he acknowledged that, you know, people are going to want to share the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth experience with their community is acknowledgement that he's like, hey, people are going to buy our game, they're going to stream with their community. They understand that that's something that people are going to do, and that they're for the most part cool with it. And that's just the attitude I just want to see going forward. However game developers decide to do it, whether they unrestricted access with a warning, or like you said, Jarrell, put a little limit for the first few weeks or so, however they do it, I'm just glad that it's finally being acknowledged that for somebody that, you know, this is something that people want to do, and that it's a good part of the marketing. That's all I'm saying. All
right, I changed my mind. Just don't restrict anything. I changed my whole opinion. Don't restrict them. Do exactly what they're doing. Don't restrict shit. Let people just play the whole game through, and ask them nicely not to post spoilers. We'll see how well that works in 2 days. But yeah, no, I've changed my mind. That sounded very sarcastic, but I really did change my mind. I've changed my entire mind just listening to Brandon.
Cool.
Helldivers 2 boss says, buying the game can't wait. Oh, sorry. Buying the game can wait. Buying the game can wait while servers are fixed. Arrowhead CEO John Pilitzstedt said of Helldiver 2's ongoing server issues, quote, I mean, as a CEO, I of course want the game to be as profitable as possible, but if you spent your last dollars and got stuck in server queues, I'd be heartbreak emoji. This is from IGN. There was a talking point. I actually just wanted to talk about this as news, because in an industry that has so many layoffs, where, you know, CEOs just are there just making a lot of money, this CEO is literally like, you can wait to buy the game, don't spend your last on this, and then you can't even play it while they you know, try to fix things. And I felt like that was definitely a call out that should have been noted, because I thought that was just great on their part.
Yeah. No, I agree. It is crazy, because I don't think we've talked about Helldivers 2 on this podcast. It's just crazy.
It's great!
It's crazy how that game just came out like a runaway success, and they just didn't know how well it would sell, so the servers just weren't ready for that. Like, it's sad, but at the same time, it's also heartwarming to know that they just didn't think it was going to be this big, and that it ended up being such a big success. It reminds me of when Final Fantasy we talked about this on the previous podcast about how Final Fantasy 14 was at its peak, and they were just like, we literally can't get any more people in. Maybe you could hold off for a second.
Yeah, I forgot
It's a very similar story to that. And, you know, there's obviously two ways to look at it. There's the heartwarming aspect to it. There's obviously the annoying part about it. So I'm just looking at the heartwarming. It's like, oh, yeah, I didn't know it would be this big.
I think I was, you know, comparing it to PAL World. And, you know, both games are not $70. Like, Helldivers 2, I think, is $40. And I remember when we saw it, we had reactions to it. I was like, the fuck is Helldivers 2? Like, why do they keep showing this game off? Like, what is this nonsense? And then they showed that, like, trailer where the guy is like, oh, my family. And it was really funny. And I was like, okay, maybe this game isn't horrible. And then I started seeing more, and I was like, oh, shoot. Like, this game is a combination of... It's so strange, because... Helldivers 2 is a combination of a lot of other really good games, but like the good parts of them, in the same way that PAL World is like an amalgamation of a bunch of other games, but like the good parts of them. And then you put them out to the world and you make games that people didn't even know they wanted. And then there's just so much you can barely keep up. So it's a nice little story, but PAL World sucks.
Okay, good to know.
All right, I'm going to move on. Gabe, do you have any comment on that?
No, I just think he's being very smart about it. I mean, you know, we're pretty sure Brandon, the last time I was on the podcast, was talking about how is it that, you know, gaming companies aren't learning, you know, from all these layoffs. And I think, you know, and the other thing that I applaud him for is, so one of the things he said is he doesn't want to do a mass hiring to help the servers, because end up having to release, so, you know, to do all those layoffs. So I think he's being very honest, very realistic with saying, like, look, yeah, the game is going right now and it's going to be going for a while, but when it stops going, you know, it's eventually going to stop going. So I think that takes a lot, because, you know, for example, like, I'm pretty sure the team that did the Avengers game was like, oh yeah, this live service game is going to go on for years and years, and then shit died within like 6 months. So I applaud him for being like, oh, you know what? It in this gaming landscape nowadays, something's hot for a couple of months, you know, a couple of weeks, maybe even a couple of months, but it's eventually going to die down. I'm not going to overreact. I'm going to keep the team I have. We're going to work the way we work, and that's that. I applaud him for that.
It's so refreshing. It really is, because, yeah, that's – I'm glad you brought up the Avengers specifically, because that is – could be like – that's like the polar opposite of this story. Where they said, man,
everyone saw the Avengers game, and then every live service that's come after that is like they didn't learn.
Exactly. They're just like, yeah, Avengers, it could just be the example of all the big live service games that they expect to do well but actually doesn't. Whereas Helldivers 2 is just like, you know, the game that they didn't expect to do that well, but it was the little one that could. And they're just like, and like you said again, they seem to have learned. They have the full expectations that it's just going to be the hot shit for a time, now that it is the hot shit, but that won't last forever, and they're cool with it. And I think, you know what? That's good. I'm glad your entire business model doesn't hinge on this game lasting forever, when most live service games are not doomed to last, or doomed to not last forever.
I mean, don't you kind of just have to be a little cynical, don't you kind of just have to tell people you should probably not buy the game until it's fixed, because then they're going to waste money on a game that doesn't work, and then your reviews are and things are not going to be good at all. Like, you kind of have to say, hey, don't buy the game while it's not working, people, just to be a little cynical. But, you know,
you're right, you are correct, and most game companies are just not being cynical in that regard.
Yeah, that game that came out in December and died within 45 days, they weren't telling them not to buy the game. Like, yeah, buy our fucked up game. Go ahead.
But that game
also stop buying the game.
But the difference is that game already had horrible press. When you have Helldivers 2 that has really, really good press, and then you have a ton of people that are buying it and literally can't play it, and like you mentioned, wasting their last on a game they literally can't get in on, what happens then? Bad shit for your company, that's what. I'm just being a cynical dick. He's a great person, apparently.
No, well, everything you're saying is completely logical, Joe. I just wish more live service game companies were as logical as you. is the point I'm trying to make.
Suicide Squad, kill the Justice League.
Is dead. And
that, oh, talking about live service games, bro. Talking about live service games.
Speaking of dead games, Street Fighter V has celebrated its 8th anniversary since its release, and Street Fighter VI Japan's Twitter/X account had a long message about it, in which they basically talked about how first they apologized for the lack of content, and they talked about how the game did not meet expectations upon launch. There were network issues, lack of content, and they like I mentioned, they apologized, and then they went on to say from the middle to the end of the game, the development team did a lot of self-reflection and worked very hard to resolve some of the issues, where the game ended with 45 playable characters and a battle system that added V-triggers, V-skills, trigger 2, V-shift, etc., and they wanted to thank everyone for their continued support of a game that released with nothing. So, what are you guys' thoughts on how the celebration post for Street Fighter V was so honest while still being celebratory? Is this something you wish other devs did when relevant?
Yeah, it's nice to know. It's nice to be self-aware.
Bruh, too little, too late. Like, my problem with that whole post was, do not celebrate your 8-year-old game that I bought Street Fighter V when it first came out. It was literally barren. Like, you guys are apologizing now. Mm-hmm. And, like, sure, I will accept the apology because obviously you've learned from it going to everything that's included in Street Fighter VI. But do not act like Street Fighter V was not a hellscape of battle passes and a shit ton of money that you had to spend to get those 45 characters that you added 8 years fucking later. Like, you can't just... I don't care about candid posts now. It, like, that post should have come out year one. Like, year one anniversary. We fucked up. Not, hey, it's our 8-year anniversary. We should probably tell everybody we're sorry about that fuck-up we did 8 years ago. Now that they're all playing Street Fighter VI, we have a heart, guys. We're sorry. We worked really hard to charge you all that money to make that game in a playable state. But just... thanks for playing. I'm done. Go ahead, Brandon. I know you had something.
Everything they said about Street Fighter V and what you said about that is so freaking true. Yeah, no, I'm also one of the year one Street Fighter V players, and remembering how absolutely barren that game was. I thought at the one saving grace of V for me was that it was a step in the right direction in terms of the tutorials of the, like, learning you how to, like, actually do the controls. Like, it's tutorial modes was, like, at the time, was better than a lot of the fighting games I had played. Street Fighter VI obviously blows that out of the water, and a lot of other fighting games have come out since. But I remember, like, 4, I felt like I couldn't play 4 because I was just like, there's so many characters, so many commands. How do I learn it? Ironically enough, the version of 4 I played the most was the 3DS version because you could just have a touch screen to, like, do a Hadouken.
Brandon! What?
Super Street Fighter 4 3D edition. That shit went hard, bro. I love that version. That was like year one 3DS. That was one of my most played games before Ocarina of Time 3D came out. But yeah, 5 had nothing aside from that. Like, it was so bare bones. I did get back in when they did the big champion edition update, and that was fun for a little bit. Then I realized that no one outside of the FGC was even playing the game anymore, so I played for champion edition of Street Fighter V for maybe a total of 1 week before again dropping the game. And I just realized, yeah, Street Fighter V, you know, I guess I'll wait for 6 now. Like, no other content update got me back into that game. So yeah. It's a message that is obviously very late, and obviously to learn for it. But yeah, Street Fighter V I think is just going to be a sore spot for people for forever, probably. Especially the fact that, you know, Sony thought it was a good idea to make that an exclusive. So, you know, it's just a game that will just never be available on Xbox, for example. Like, it's PC, PS4 exclusive. So, at least 6 didn't do that. Everyone can play whatever they want, I guess.
So, what I was going to say was that, Brendan, everyone knows you don't play the tutorials. You get your ass beat until you stop getting your ass beat, and that's how you learn to play fighting games. And you just button
up. Yeah, I'm not about that life. So, that's why I'll never be in the FGC, I guess.
I was joking. I will not comment on Street Fighter V not being on Xbox and how Street Fighter VI probably shouldn't also be on Xbox because nobody plays it on Xbox. And any place that you go, any competition you go to, you're going to see PS5 set up, and there's a reason for that. But I won't go into that conversation right now.
I will go into it just a little bit only because I'll mention that the fact that it even is on Xbox, well, the Street Fighter VI specifically, is acknowledgement that, hey, more than just FGC players play fighting games. And that's also something I appreciate about, you know, I'm not going to keep this short because this is going to go into tension, but the world tour mode of the Street Fighter VI is, you know, part of their saying that, hey, you know, maybe we should also do something so people who aren't hardcore fighting game players can enjoy this too. And I think that's why the Xbox version exists, because it doesn't need to for the fighting game players, because like you just said, the cabinets they're running is just PS5
Brendan,
only.
This whole, I didn't follow anything you just said. What?
My point is, the game should be as accessible to many people as possible if it can be. That's all I'm trying to say. It shouldn't be restricted.
Yes, it should. You know, I'm sorry. No. Okay, I know we were about to move on. but really quick. Yes. Casual players in the fighting scene exist.
Yes.
Not to be an asshole, a lot of those guys usually play Super Smash Bros.
Yes.
But there's a reason these fighting games do so good and they don't have so many entries in them. The reason we have 6 Street Fighter games isn't because it was so accessible to all these Xbox players. No, it's because PC and PlayStation players have kept that fighting game alive because that's the best way to play it. You don't... Yes, games are made for everyone to enjoy. After a certain point, though, games are made because there's a fan base in mind and because you need to keep that fan base entertained. That fan base was already solidified on PlayStation. They did not give a shit about it being accessible. They just want more money at that point. But that had nothing to do with making it more accessible for the casual fans.
That's why I was confused, because I didn't think that...
Yeah, I don't agree, but continue.
Brenda said, no, you're fucking wrong. Was it?
Okay.
Huh?
No, go.
Don't rush me. Oh my God, I lost my... I gotta pull up the next story. Oh my God. Baldur's Gate 3 won Game of the Year at the DICE Awards. Other winners included Action Game of the Year went to Marvel Spider-Man 2. Adventure Game of the Year went to Zelda's Tears of the Kingdom. Family Game of the Year went to Super Mario Bros. Wonder. And Fighting Game of the Year went to Street Fighter 6.
Shocker. Who won it for the Game Awards? The best fighter?
Street Fighter 6?
Yeah. I thought it was a different game for some reason. Oh, it wasn't Mortal Kombat. That's right. Never mind. That's my bad.
Xbox had a podcast where they decided to talk about everything that was going on with a bunch of rumors, because there were a bunch of rumors that a bunch of Xbox games would... We talked about it on the podcast before. I listened to the last episode, I believe. It was a lot of rumors that everything, a bunch of exclusive games were coming to other platforms, and I talked about how people were allowed to be, you know, upset about that. And Brandon talked about how... Whatever. Go listen to the last podcast, because I'm misquoting myself. I don't want to misquote Brandon. I'm already misquoting myself. I'm pretty sure I didn't even say that. So to address all the rumors, they decided to have an Xbox podcast, the official Xbox podcast, to talk Xbox business. And thanks to Brandon, we've got some highlights from the podcast, just in case you didn't hear it. So... Xbox is not going third party, as the internet is rumored, and many exclusive games will remain exclusive. However, 4 previously exclusive games will be coming to other platforms. These titles are, they were the same ones that I mentioned in chat. They are Pentiment, Grounded,
Hi-Fi Rush, and Sea of Thieves.
And you know what's crazy? I literally wrote a news story about this at The Gamer, and I just blanked. Hi-Fi Rush and Sea of Thieves. Thank you. I have no idea why I just blanked like that. and they were revealed by Xbox, but also by those companies on their terms, which included the Nintendo Partner Direct for a couple of them as well. They hoped to reach a larger audience to guarantee future health. He explicitly said that neither games are Starfield or Indiana Jones, meaning that those will remain exclusives for the foreseeable future, because people were concerned about, specifically, I remember hearing about both of those, actually, Starfield and Indiana Jones. Activision Blizzard games are going to start coming to Game Pass, starting with Diablo 4 on March 28th. I saw that commercial. It's too late. Game Pass will remain on the platforms that they are currently available on, with no plans to bring them to other systems like PlayStation or Nintendo. Game Pass subscribers are at a record high with 34 million subs, and Xbox is committed to making new consoles while also committing to make sure past games through backward compatibility remain a focus even as they advance forward. Those are specifically for rumors that Game Pass might be elsewhere, which we also talked about where I said there's no fucking way. that there were also those rumors that Xbox was not making another console at all, and they were just going to not focus on console games that were also addressed. So thoughts on that?
Making that, I think, the comments team that did Grounded to try and make that game on Switch just because you're losing the console wars that's torture.
That was not what I was going to expect. I mean, that's not what I expected. That's a response.
Just saying, making like Hi-Fi Rush, I feel like that could run on the Switch perfectly fine, but
Hi-Fi Rush is great. Game, go play it.
I will.
But on Game Pass. It's not Grounded game. Yeah, not on
Switch. To be fair, Grounded has been out since Kelly wrote about it on HP Critical, which was fucking years ago. So, like,
I mean, still, it's a very high graphic game. Like, it's. Yes, it is. Yes,
the graphic fidelity on Grounded is not what I would say high, but okay. No, we all have our own opinions. High
quality. Because it has a lot to do with the lighting of the game. But
yeah, fair. Yeah, okay, that is fair.
That game will not be running too great on Switch. And neither, side tangent, that Kingdom Come Deliverance game, do not get it on Switch for the love of God. that game barely ran on a PS4. It's not going to run on a Switch. I'm saving you your money right now. Back to the topic.
Pentiment is great. I played it on Game Pass. Hi-Fi Rush is great. I played it on Game Pass. What were the other two? I just talked
about this.
Oh my god. Like
Sea of Thieves and Hi-Fi Rush.
I said the Hi-Fi Rush.
Oh, Grounded and Sea of
Thieves. Grounded. I Grounded is Grounded, and Sea of Thieves is not fun.
You know what's funny?
Gabe agrees. Sea of Thieves is not fun. And it's so crazy because people are comparing Skull and Bones to Sea of Thieves, and I think both games are just not fun. But just don't be a pirate. Pretend to be a pirate.
Don't be a pirate in those games.
In those games, go be a pirate in those games.
Assassin's Creed 4, the Black
Flag. There you go. Yes.
But Sea of Thieves, I definitely thought that game was going to be like way more swashbuckly than it is. And you're literally just running around with a group of friends trying not to get eaten by a shark.
Yeah. And there's no, you can't turn PvP off ever. So, like, you just, if you just start and there's some asshole group of four people, they just blow your ship up and then they just gank you and then you don't want to play anymore.
Damn. So you tell it, so what you
that didn't happen to me, but I did watch it happen to a friend.
So what you're telling me is that Blackbeard, back in whenever the fuck his story happened, was out sailing the sea and was saying, damn, another pirate group? I wish I could turn off PvP. So I can just rob these merchant ships without being bothered. Fuck.
Wow. Well, yes, because guess what? That's what you could do in Sea of Thieves. I mean, fucking, what's the other one?
Skull and Bones. Skull and Bones?
Skull and Bones! There are specific PvP areas in Skull and Bones. It's just not fun. Whatever. This isn't about how fun
Sea of Thieves is. You can't even board the other ships on Skull and Bones.
This isn't about how fun those games are. I apologize for the tangent, but I can say that... You can
play Mario Party 2 on NSO, where they have Pirate Land.
There you go. Go if you want to play Pirate, go play that. NSO, if you got it. I think they did a decent job addressing the rumors. I think we also learned like nothing. I feel like just confirmation of things that we kind of already knew.
Yes. We did. However, the internet interneted and they were saying some shit that wasn't true, and they got blown way out of proportion. Like, it's very clear that Microsoft/Phil Spencer was just like, oh, well, we'll announce a few things on this Xbox podcast. It's not going to be a big deal. Then they saw the flood of tweets saying, what the fuck you mean all these games on Xbox are going to PlayStation 5? I'm going to burn my Xbox right now. And then Phil Spencer was like, all right, let's do something with this podcast. I guess we'll just tell a few more stuff to just, like, douse these fires that these crazy internet people have been... you're right. It was nothing. It was nothing but shit blown out of proportion. People jumping to conclusions based on no information whatsoever. So they had to douse the fires and say, no, we are not going third party. Xbox exists. These games are going to go multi-platform for the reasons we have stated, but we're not throwing the entire library on other systems. Game Pass is still going to be PC, Xbox. Calm down, people, is basically the entire vibe I got from the podcast. Just calm down. This is what's happening. See ya, basically.
So buy these studios and make exclusives just to put them elsewhere later on?
Yeah, that's a great question.
It's about... Okay.
Oh, goody. Do this. Oh, man, I was getting ready, so I was like...
Just what's the point? Like, legitimately... If you're all about sharing the games, what was the point of buying the studios? Because you told us years ago that the point of buying the studios was to have exclusive games for Xbox, something you didn't have. And now you're saying, 4 years later, that, oh, well, now those same third-party games are going to be everywhere else. So what was the point of buying all of these studios?
Well, Jarrell... Phil Spencer would answer that question by saying, well, by purchasing these studios, we hope to expand the gaming ecosystem and put more games in the hands of people on our own terms. However, Brandon is going to say, you're full of shit.
Because, it is clear, and we talked about this before, which, where I agreed with that tweet from that guy who I don't agree with ever, in which he said that, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said that Microsoft is always reactive, not proactive. And this is another example. Like, that whole Xbox podcast thing was a reaction to rumors that started because of y'all not having a clear message. And you don't have a clear message because every time you come up and say something, it's explaining why what you said before isn't working or isn't making sense. Like, you have to come out and explain why Redfall was in the state that it was in because you fucked up. You have to come out and explain why your games are no longer exclusives when you've already told us that you purchased these studios to make them exclusive. But then you say, but they're not. But it's only some of them. But, like... Which ones? I don't know. The third-party ones. But, like, which third-party ones? And now you have people thinking, you know, Starfield. What about Starfield? Is that one that is going to be, you know, exclusive or not? Obviously, they addressed it. But the reason that you have these questions is because their messaging before has been, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember their messaging being that Starfield is not coming to any other system. Because I think we talked about it. Say, Skyrim 6? No. What's that other game?
Elder Scrolls 6.
Like, we don't know what that is. But the messaging has been both, like, it's not coming anywhere else, but we also want every gamer to play everything, but also we bought all these CDs because we don't have our own games. So it's like, the problem and the reason you keep having to react is because you don't have clear messaging for people. Nobody fucking knows. I don't know what the fuck they're doing. I just know some games come on Game Pass and then I play them. That's it. Well, and I've already played it, so I guess I don't gotta buy it again. Yay. That's all I got from this is that go play Pentiment and Hi-Fi Rush. Those are great games.
I think a lot of their plans have changed, like you said, to be reactive. Their initial thing was, let's buy these studios and get, you know, make them exclusive. People buy more Xboxes and whatnot. And then he saw, you know, oh, we're not doing too good against PlayStation. Let's bring up the farce of, yeah, we're buying all these studios to broaden the gaming ecosystem so everyone has a way to play them at any time. And then, of course, the exclusive stuff came out like, oh, you know, even though I just said let's bring games to everybody, we're going to make all these Bethesda games, which we know people want to go exclusive. And I would like to make this known right now. I hope we remember this in future time, in like 20 years, when Elder Scrolls 6 comes out. Elder Scrolls 6, bro, I have no faith in that game anymore.
Yeah, 2044.
If Elder Scrolls 6 does not bring in more Xbox console units sold, they will be putting a lot of those Bethesda games out to the rest of the systems. They're banking right now because that's probably what they thought with Starfield. Oh, Starfield's going to make people buy a bunch of Xboxes or get into was it on Game Pass?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's going to make a whole bunch of people, you know, sign up for Game Pass and whatnot. And guess what? It didn't. No one bought an Xbox to play Starfield. Everyone who had Game Pass, everyone who had a PC bought it there. People who had Game Pass were like, oh, I guess we'll try it out. And then the game ended up being kind of a dud. So no one else was interested on it after 2 weeks. So it seems more like they're banking on, oh, we're going to make this studio exclusive when their first, you know, game or two that we own come out and doesn't do how we wanted it to do, then we'll release it to everybody else.
And then even then, it doesn't make sense to me because Hi-Fi Rush was developed by Tango Gameworks, I believe, but that was also published by Bethesda. So every time I hear Bethesda, I'm just like, what is the stat, like, what, because wasn't Redfall also Bethesda, right? But that one's like an exclusive to Xbox, but I guess it's because they developed it. So it's like, what the fuck, like, what the fuck is going on? What are y'all doing?
I genuinely don't know what the criteria is going to be anymore. Like, they've given us, you know, in the case of the games that those four games coming out now, they've given reasons like, oh, for the two multiplayer ones, they said, oh, well, we want to grow the player base more and whatever. And then the other two games that are single player folks are like, well, they've been out a year. I think they've done as good as they can on Xbox. Let's fish them out. But that's just the four games, but two examples, essentially, because they're, you know, and we don't know what the other criteria is going to be. Like, we don't, like, they're essentially picking and choosing which games they want keep exclusive on Xbox and which ones they don't. Hell, that Nintendo partner presentation, the second to last announcement was, here's these five Rare games that now you can play on NSO. And I saw Rare's logo on Nintendo Partner Direct, and I was like, oh shit, are we finally getting DK64 or Diddy Kong Racing? And then it was like those, I'm like, they're not bad games. Like, they're games that Rare games that people like, but I'm just like, those? It sounds like it'd be a lot harder to get those over Donkey Kong and Diddy Kong, which are characters that Nintendo owns, than for them to just get these five other games. And if you get them, if you play them in it, so it'll say, like, underneath it, it'll say Xbox Game Studios, which is still very weird for me to see on, like, NSO. I thought it was weird when Banjo-Kazooie came out on NSO, and now these, I'm just like, this is so strange. I don't know. It's I don't think we're, at least for a long time, going to fully understand Xbox's grand strategy, assuming they even have one. We'll just see what happens, I guess.
And then, like, if you had, all they had to do was do what PlayStation does, right? Like, also coming to Xbox or NPC, right? Like, just do what they do with Final Fantasy, right? Final Fantasy 16, we know it's coming to PC. It's probably also going to come to Xbox at some point. No one is confused or arguing or upset about that or doesn't know what from what, because it's very clear that The Last of Us is not coming to Xbox. It's very clear that God of War is not coming to Xbox. Like, it's coming to PC. It's also very clear that Final Fantasy VII is already on PC, and there is a potential for it to come to Xbox. So, like, we at least you're the community has an understanding of some of this stuff. With Xbox, it's literally, we don't know until somebody fucks up and Phil Spencer tells us the truth about it after the fuck up. Like, that's how things have run. Yeah. And that's the problem that they have.
Yeah, like, it's pretty much a formula that somebody fucks up and then something gets explained. It's reactive and not proactive. Like, you made up the great example just now. PlayStation are now putting their exclusives on PC. You know, after a few years, it has come out because it's the same reason that Phil gave of why certain Xbox games come out. They did as well as they could on Xbox. We feel it's done as best can. Now let's go ahead and fish it out to the platforms. That's literally why Sony did the same thing for their games now. Like, you know, 3 years in, everyone that wanted that said Sony game on PS4, PS5 bought it already. So let's go ahead and see if we can get it some more money from the PC audience.
And nobody's mad about the transparency because we know the PlayStation players are not like, don't you dare put my Last of Us on PC, because PlayStation already let us know it's going to happen. Like, we are not shocked or surprised. Whereas Xbox was very much like, this shit ain't going nowhere. So if you want to play it, there's only one way to play it. Just kidding.
No one's mad. No one's mad about PlayStation putting their exclusives out.
People are mad. You're right.
That's wrong. Xbox fans are mad about that because they're like, oh, what exclusives does PlayStation have now? You guys are putting your games all over the place. Fucking losers. Sorry.
Well, on Valentine's Day, because I want to move on, because now we're calling people losers and that's not nice. We love Xbox players. I am an Xbox player myself. I play Game Pass. So we love you. I'm playing.
Rare Replay is nice on Xbox, I guess.
I am playing Persona 3 Reload on Game Pass right now. I am playing Infinite Wealth on my Xbox right now. My two big JRPGs. So I love Xbox and players. Phil, if you're listening, I don't hate you. Send me codes. Valentine's Day, the Fantastic Four cast was revealed. in a tweet and an Instagram post. No video or anything. It was literally just a comic style, an old comic style image, and the actors were tagged. It says, "Happy Valentine's Day from Marvel's first family, Pedro Pascal, Vanessa Kirby, Ebon Moss Bachrach, and Joseph Quinn are the Fantastic Four. Marvel Studios Fantastic Four in theaters July 25th, 2025. That's it.
Yeah, so, that's it. I mean, sure.
What are your thoughts on the casting and the way that this was announced?
I mean, I don't know how to feel about... I literally don't know anything about Vanessa Kirby and Joseph Quinn. So, okay, cool. I guess I'll see a trailer, see how they perform. I saw him play... I believe he played... Microchip in the Punisher series, so he did pretty good there, so that's interesting to see how he translates as the Thing. And Pedro Pascal, I mean I just like the actor, I like his work, so I think he'll be fine as Reed Richards. Again, need to see trailer, but I mean, he's a good actor. As far as I think the more interesting thing is just like the announcement of it, just this is, I think we really are getting to a point where marketing people are just like thinking of like new weird ways to like announce stuff for their movies. So like, what if we just threw out a picture on Valentine's Day as our way to cast announcement? Like, it doesn't matter if it's a good idea, a bad idea, weird idea. It doesn't matter. I think what marketing people are now focused on is like, has this been done before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think we've really seen casting announcement on Valentine's Day with like a weird image like this. Like, everybody was just shocked that this was how they announced the movie. And again, I'm not commenting on like whether it was good to do it this way or bad to do it. Yeah, it's just unexpected. And I think unexpected overall can be good for the most part. Like, I was like, yeah, no one saw it coming. It got a lot of people talking that day. So
that day,
hardcore Marvel fans. I mean, we're talking about it because we do a podcast. But I think most people, you know, they talked about it for a day, and now they're just gonna not talk about it again until a trailer comes out, and then the conversation will start again. That's the cycle of things. And at the end of the day, I think if they had done like a trailer or images, it would have gotten people talking. But you know. I think more people were talking about just how weird this announcement, about how they announced it, more so than the announcement itself. I think that got more people talking about it, which I guess was the ultimate plan. So, you know, they say good. They say all press is good press, right? So it's just
they're
like
wrong.
If all people are talking about it, I guess in the end they see it as a win, whether it is or not.
They're wrong. People say that, but they're wrong. All press is not good press. Don't listen to that, people. The cast sucks. The announcement was weird as
God, I'm so glad you're the one that said it first.
Like, I was, first of all, I was like, You know what, Brendan? I agree with the marketing thing, because I will say I was Googling who the fuck half these people were. So that worked out for them. I'm sure Google Trends on that day for Vanessa Kirby and Joseph Quinn and everyone who's not Pedro Pascal were up. Unless obviously people know their names. I'm sure that people have seen things that they're in. I just personally haven't. Sure. So
I haven't either.
You guys haven't watched Stranger Things?
No, I know Joseph Quinn from Stranger Things, but like that's it.
I've only seen season one of Stranger Things.
Yeah, like I know him from that, but that's it. Vanessa Kirby is just, she just is
made
up.
Yeah, she was the one that I actually had to
move. It's like I've never seen this woman in my life. But yeah, the cast sucks. I looked them up. I don't see any type of synergy. Obviously, there's no trailer. The problem is there's no trailer for me to be like, oh yeah, they're going to be like a really good Fantastic Four. But they're just, I think it's because I've seen so many really good fan casts of what people would have wanted for the Fantastic Four, that when I saw this, I was like, oh, disappointed. Also, I saw someone say, like, they showed the old Fantastic Four cast with, like, Jessica Alba, Chris Evans, and they were like, all these people are hot. And I'll just end with that. I will not make comparisons.
I will ask you both a question then, because just get your opinions on it. It's still relatively new when they when the Super Mario Brothers movie first got announced, and then like a few months later, just randomly in a Nintendo Direct, hey, here's the cast for this movie with no trailer, just here's the cast, and we all had to just sit with that cast for like several months before we actually got a trailer, which will undoubtedly be the same with this one. I want to ask you both, how do y'all feel about, you know, cast first, trailer much later? Is that, do you think it's even worth it at that point?
Because, well, one, everyone on social media doesn't shut the fuck up. Like, they're gonna keep doing their fan cast, and it's like, look, I know you want this person, but here's this person. And two, that's just the way the movie cycle works. You know, it's piece by piece, not everything's decided at once. So, and I don't know. I just rather know the cast so everyone can shut up. Like, I was getting tired of seeing like 50 different Invisible Womans. I'm like, bro.
Well, you got
Vanessa Kirby. To be clear, I don't disagree with your opinion on that. Like, that's, you're absolutely right. That is how the movie cycle works. I just like think, like, when I see like if the trailer was coming out, like, well, no, you're right. If that's just the way the movie cycle works. Like, we're going to, like, if you're really invested in the movie, you're going to know who the cast is long before the movie is. If you're not, then maybe the trailer is how you first find out, oh, wow, they're playing this character. You know, different people pay different amounts of attention to, you know, the cycle, as you put it.
I think it's...
Oh, go ahead.
Mm-mm.
No, go ahead.
Please.
Anyway, I was going to say, I do like how they announced the cast. Like, you know... Most people do it now in just tweets.
Yeah.
So it's like, or in Nintendo's...
With a headshot. Nintendo's tweets way, with headshots.
Yeah, Nintendo, you know, they do it. They give you a big picture of Chris Pratt that you don't want on your screen saying, this is your Mario. I do think it was kind of unique and, you know, kind of a... I guess, you know, it's a comic book story. So it was cool that they put it in comic book form.
Yeah.
And it wasn't something big. Like, you know, they weren't like for 2 weeks like, oh, reveal coming soon for something, or... You know, oh, 1 week remaining for a big reveal, and there's this freaking picture of the cast. So I do like that they were just like, oh, here's the cast.
They just threw it out.
Was Valentine's Day a weird day to do it? Absolutely. It's a day of love. Everyone's focused on each other and their soulmates and whatnot. A little weird to just be like, oh, look at this guy. All right, now go kiss your girlfriend. Like,
are so many single nerds out there who are very happy to have something to talk about on Valentine's Day, sir.
There's always something to talk about when you're
single. Yeah, it was called Tomb Raider the Remaster.
Oh my god. Okay. Well, anyway,
I wanted to say my little bits about the cast.
Go ahead.
They're too old.
I wasn't moving on. I was going to answer Brandon's question.
I thought you were going to move on.
They're too old. Okay, so he's not wrong. They are too old. And to answer your question, I was going to just say that when it comes to, like, the cast reveal, I think it works really well if you have really interesting, well-known cast. And for me, this didn't work that well because I only knew two of them. So, like, the hype factor was, like, whatever as fuck. Like, whereas Mario, everybody knows Mario, right? Like, Mario's obviously going to be more popular than Fantastic Four. But at the time, like, you have, you know, actors in their prime or actors that are super questionable in the role, like Chris Pratt. So that was a big moment. Because it's like, Chris Pratt, how the fuck? Like, we were all just like, what the fuck is Chris Pratt doing here? But then you had Jack Black. Everyone knows Jack Black. Everyone loves Jack Black. It was, like, before we even heard him, it was one of those things where people were like, this is going to be good. Keegan-Michael Key, everyone was like, that guy's hilarious. This is going to be good. Anya Taylor-Joy, at the height of her career right now, what a great casting choice at that time. Because people literally love that woman. She's done, like, you know, from that chess game to The Menu to, like, she's been in a punch. I haven't even seen all those movies and I know that bitch. Like, she's fucking great. So when you do it like that and you have a cast that is, you know, noteworthy and something to talk about, I think it works really well. But then when you announce it like this and then people have to Google who these people are, I think it didn't work well at all. I feel like what would have worked better is some form of, like, image to go along with them. Like, what do they look like? What is this? Well, obviously not Invisible Woman, because she gonna be invisible, but, like, what does everyone else look like in their costumes, right? Like, well, yeah, that was a bad joke, apparently. Mm-hmm. I know it's gonna be sometimes, but I think that would have helped this better, because, like, when I literally saw it, like, our conversation was more, the conversation that I had in our Slack group was literally more of who are these people, as opposed to I wonder how they're gonna play these characters. It was just like, I've never heard of this person in my life. So I think it works better when you have a hot, sexy, interesting cast at the top of their career. Not saying that these people are going to be bad. They could be really good. But to agree with what Gabe said, I think they're all pretty old to be playing these characters, and I just keep thinking about how the original Fantastic Four was bad, but people liked it because all the characters were hot, and that's fine. Sometimes you just want hot people with superpowers, and that's okay. But maybe these people will be great and not hot and old, but great. Who knows?
Yeah, like I bring up them being old because you have to remember, this is no longer just a, like, standalone movie. Every Marvel movie that comes out now is usually intertwined with each other. And we all know the Fantastic Four is going to be part of the Secret Wars. That big, you know, end game end story for this current phase or this current set of phases is not going to happen for another 5 to 6 years. And even then, it's probably going to get pushed back because so many, you know, there's always delays and whatnot. But, like, at the same time, like, don't get me wrong. Pedro Pascal, yeah, he's really good actor. Everyone loves him. He's overbooked. Like, he's, I don't want to say he's becoming like a Chris Pratt where he's in everything because people don't like Chris Pratt. But, like, look, like, even if you don't want to use, like, you know, new talent because it's a well-known thing, like, you know, look, search for someone who's not used as much. Like, to me, John Krasinski was the perfect Fantastic Four. They should have kept that from whatever movie he just did. Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange. This Vanessa Kirby woman, that's going to sound mean. I don't know. I just looked up the movie she's been in. The only notable movies I know is Mission Impossible, but one of the newer ones. Like, and then this, the Thing, first of all, the guy who plays The Thing absolutely looks too old. He's the only reason I know him is because people won't shut up about The Bear, that Hulu show. He's like a secondary main character. He's always saying cousin or some shit like that. It's the only reason I know him, because I keep seeing his stupid face with the template of cousin on memes. So it's like, I don't know. And then Joseph Quinn, like, I guess this is me being patriotic, but why are you going to cast a British guy to play literally an American sweetheart?
Man. Like,
That's what Johnny Storm is.
Johnny Storm is the most red-blooded American.
Yeah, that dude is like 100% American. Like, No, I was gonna say if he was real, he would have been at the January 6th thing. But
oh, fuck.
Okay, but like you're not wrong.
But like, yeah, but like that's my thing. Like I get it, you know.
And it's so funny that you say that.
I don't get it. Like, I understand when a character has different variants. You know, like, you know, there we do have a Black Captain America. We do have, you know, a woman Thor. But we don't have a British Johnny Storm.
Yeah, now we do. Yeah, it's so funny that you say that because, like, look, Chris Evans, he went from being Johnny Storm to literally Captain America. You're right.
Yeah.
Like, it's, yeah. Just, like,
it's a pipeline, bro.
Like, yes, clearly.
Yeah, so I don't know. A lot of people were excited for the casting. I think they're just on a fake high. I know as soon as that movie comes out, everyone's going to bash it for one thing or another.
I also
best
think
of luck,
yeah,
to them.
For me personally, I wouldn't call my news of the casting to be exciting. Like, I like Pedro Pascal, but I wouldn't say I'm excited. Like, again, I really feel like I'm in the same exact situation I was when they announced the cast of the Super Mario Brothers movie. I was like, I need a trailer. That's fine. Like, okay, I know these actors. Well, in this case, I don't even know these actors except for one, really. But I was like, okay, that's fine. These are the actors. They're going with it. I need a trailer to see it. Then I feel like I can actually say something more meaningful because, like, even when I was talking about the casting, I didn't have much more to say. Like, yeah, these are actors. I was talking more about
they're actors. They're
in Hollywood.
I was speaking more about how they announced it. Like, I think that's the more important thing of this story because it's just a never been done before kind of thing. And just announcing a picture on Valentine's Day. It's yeah.
I think it's kind of hard because with Marvel, like, we've seen how they've done casting lately, and a lot of it has been really high profile celebrities lately. Like, aside from like the OG Avengers, like, as the series has grown, so have the guest spots in these movies. Like, look at the Eternals, it was fucking stacked. Like, sure, people hated it, whatever, but like, just look at that roster of stars literally in that movie. And like, as you go forward, like, fucking Angela Bassett is in the MCU and that bitch is wonderful. Like, she's a legend.
Oh, yeah.
So like, when you have a casting history that is so stacked, the further you go in, you know, like Lupita Nyong'o in Black Panther, that was a big deal because she was a big deal at the time. So was Chadwick Boseman. It's like, and this only makes them bigger. So I think for me, it was kind of just like to go from, wow, who's next to like, damn, who's this? It's like, it kind of diminished it for me. But I'm also in the same position that I was in before I knew the cast. Now that I know it, nothing has changed.
I think in the case of Marvel, it really depends on the character itself, because if the character is well known enough, they can get away with casting someone that's not overbooked or overused, because, you know, because if the character can be that character, that's what people care about. When you have a character that people don't know, however, then you're like, shit, we got to get some celebrities so people actually come watch this shit. Like, I think that's why, to your point, why the Eternals had that stacked cast, because outside of comic fans, no one knows who the Eternals are. So they were like, we have to make sure people come see this movie. Let's make sure all 10 most of these 10 actors have some history to them. People be like, oh shit, I remember them for that movie, or I remember them for that show. So people will actually go see the movie. And I think as the MCU goes on and they keep pulling into this reservoir of lesser known characters, this is only going to continue because they want to make sure that people, you know, get their butts to the theater seats, or if it's a Disney Plus show, make sure they get that subscription to watch the show. They want to make sure people see these things, so they're going to make sure the actors are there. It's the same reason why we got the Super Mario Brothers movie with celebrity casts, because they want, like, Mario, I would argue, is big enough that I think a lot of people would want to see it anyway. But they really want to make sure that the parents took their kids to get it. That's why all animated movies have stacked celebrity casts, because they have to make sure little Timmy will watch that animated movie regardless because it looks funny. But to make sure mom and dad take them to the theater to go see it, they have to have something, some stake in the race too. That's just how it is. Okay,
if you ain't taking your kid to the theater to watch a Mario movie because you don't know the cast, you should not be.
Listen, no. You can say it because listen. My dad was a trooper. If I asked him enough to go see a movie, even if he had, he took me to see the Pokemon movies. His ass was asleep 30 minutes in, but he was a real one for taking me to those movies anyways to see them in theaters.
Good parenting.
Yeah.
Great nap space. Movie theaters are great for naps, to be honest. Well, IGN Live is a thing that is happening. They've announced that they're going to be hosting IGN Live, an in-person three-day fan event in Los Angeles this summer, featuring gaming and entertainment creators, developers, publishers, and enthusiasts. So it's kind of going to be something, I'm assuming, very E3-esque. We'll see what happens with that. Crystal Dynamics has condemned the offensive depiction of people and cultures rooted in racial and ethnic prejudices in Tomb Raider 1-3 Remastered, and says the stereotypes portrayed are deeply harmful, inexcusable, and do not align with our values. I brought this one up for a quick talking point because I wanted to know what you guys think of this approach. So instead of changing some of what they found offensive in the game, they left it, but they put, this message at the beginning of the game mentioning that some of this is offensive and culturally rooted in racial and ethnic prejudices. However, we are, let me just read it for y'all. It says, the game in this collection contains offensive depictions of people and cultures rooted in racial and ethnic prejudices. These stereotypes are deeply harmful, inexcusable, and do not align with our values at Crystal Dynamics. Rather than removing this content, we have chosen to present it here in its original form, unaltered, in the hopes that we may acknowledge its harmful impact and learn from it. What do you guys think about that?
It's the exact same thing that Disney Plus does with some of their older Disney movies. Like, they haven't altered those movies. They'll just throw a message at the beginning to let you know. For the really racist shit, they just don't have it on there. Like, the Song of the South is not on Disney Plus and probably will never will be. But for some of the stuff that has some harmful stuff, they'll have that message. And, you know, I think it's dangerous. Like, obviously, you know, what they thought was okay back then is obviously not okay today. And I think it is important to preserve history so you can learn from it. Pretending it doesn't exist will just invite it to happen again. So I think it is important that they retained it in, but did have that message to, you know, acknowledge what happened back then.
I mean, it's a remake. It's a remaster of a game that's already made.
Yeah, it's a remaster. If it was a remake, they might have just taken it off altogether. But because it is a remaster, I think it is, like, that's the other aspect of it, that I think it is important to have the game as close to its original form as possible.
Yeah. If it's just a remaster. I also think it's, you know, like, that's, you know, it's appropriate warning. Like, hey, we know this is wrong when it was made at the time. We're letting you know it's wrong. It's not our fault if you're too stupid to actually educate yourself on what the culture actually is.
Okay, well, Sony Interactive Entertainment will not release any new major existing franchise titles before March 31st, 2025. Quote, regarding the first-party software, we aim to continue to focus on producing high-quality works and developing live service games. Did someone just sigh? I didn't even say anything.
That was me.
You said live Sony Group President, game. Chief Operating Officer, and Chief Financial Officer Hiroki Totoki. What a great name. Can I just, like, Hiroki Totoki is, like, such a good fucking name. Like, props to your parents. quote, but while major projects are currently under development, we do not plan to release any new major existing franchise titles next fiscal year. Editor note, this begins April 1st, 2024 and ends March 31st, 2025, like God of War and Marvel Spider-Man 2. So... do you guys think that everyone's caught up on their COVID-affected releases?
Oh, hey, I said that.
Well,
it sounds like it. It kind of sounds like, you know, a lot of the projects that were at minimum thought of during COVID have finally been released out into the open. So now it's like now a lot, you know, some of the companies are taking the time to kind of slow down and, hey, let's start planning out what's next, what we're going to do and whatnot. So, yeah. Interesting to see what the hell they're going to give us for the next year, because again,
yeah,
according to Xbox, we don't have exclusives. So,
oh boy, yeah, we don't have exclusives. Yeah, no major first party titles like from established franchises until 2025. So on one hand, I don't think that's that concerning, because I think there's enough third party game, high quality third party games coming to PlayStation 5 and other platforms as well, that I think that people have things to play. But the fact that, you know, Sony themselves can't supply like anything in their big franchise or from existing franchises in this year, you know, it's a little concerning. We have been talking about how, and I'll explain why, we have been talking about in past podcasts about how the cost of making these big cinematic AAA experiences is going higher and higher, and they can't seem to keep staff in to keep making those games. But the other thing besides the staff and the layoffs that have been happening is the fact that these games take time to make. Shocking, I know, but like it takes time to make a games that like cost multi-million dollars and are as high quality as are. There is no arguing that God of War Ragnarok is a great game. There's no arguing Spider-Man 2 is a great game. But they take time to make because of their quality and how, you know, intense the graphics are, the storytelling, all that cinematic stuff. It really underlines a major point that I think you also need for your system to also have some smaller scale games that don't cost as much money, but maybe also don't sell as much. Like, you know, that you can recoup costs and keep audiences engaged in the meantime. Nintendo is pretty good about that, you know? Like, they will pump out, you know, last year we got Tears of the Kingdom, Super Mario Brothers, Wonder. But there's always constantly those, like, double-A or single-A games coming out here and there. Like, we just got Mario vs. Donkey Kong. That's just a remake of a Game Boy Advance game. Not fully priced either. I still think 50 is a little too high, but that's another story. But the point is, you know, games that are under the $60 or $70 price tag that can come out and like fill up your release schedule are important. And those games, you know, some of those games have a big audience too, that, you know, not everyone needs to have those games that like, you know, are warranted that $70 price tag. Some people are just fine playing, get smaller games that they can play for a few weeks and move on to something else. That's why indie games are so successful these days. You know, they're short, but you can get short bursts in for a reasonable price, you know. But there needs to be something in the middle is my point. Like, indie games are on the lower end in terms of price, and then these AAA games are on the higher end. There's an important middle ground that I think can be used to fill out catalogs that I don't think Sony fully realizes right now. You know, they got rid of a lot of their studios that produced, like the Japan studio got axed a few years ago, and they had plenty of AA games, but, you know, that doesn't exist anymore. And now we're in the situation where Sony's like going to go through 2024 relying only on third party, and that's concerning.
Okay.
To give a little light, especially to the Bloodborne fans, this does mean they could be making a Bloodborne remake within that time period.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to say that this just says that they're not doing any new major existing franchise titles. This doesn't say that they're not doing any AAA titles at all until next year, April. I mean,
that's fair. That's absolutely a fair point. We could be very, like, we're only in February of this month. We very well could be getting
this year.
We could very well be getting some surprises. Like, hell, we're getting Rise of the Ronin, for example. That's, you know, Team Ninja's helping with that, and that seems to be a big exclusive. There could be other games like that that have that AAA quality coming out this year. But the point is, we don't know. And I don't think they could, like, you know, we could very well be surprised.
It does say that major existing franchise titles, including intellectual properties such as God of War and Marvel Spider-Man, are the ones that we're not getting. It does not include new intellectual properties like Concord or non-major existing franchise titles like Until Dawn. So, once again, like, Until Dawn is a franchise title that is getting a remake that could possibly come out this year that is going to be on or near a AAA level. So, it's just... IP that are specifically to PlayStation that aren't getting these. So that doesn't mean, like, because we just got, you know, Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, a AAA title.
That's what I mean.
That
a
is
third,
like
a third party. That's a multi-platform.
Yes. So
those I'm sure will come out this year, no doubt. PS, like, I'm not worried
the way
about
that you
PS5.
Were saying it really sounded like there's only a middle ground of PlayStation developed. Titles, and that's not necessarily true. There's more.
That's what I'm saying. Like PlayStation, like if you are a PS5 owner, you will be fine this year. There will be games coming out for your system. I just worry that if 2024 is barren because of these games taking so long, I just wonder if it's an output that they can sustain. Like,
but
that's
see,
a
where
big...
are you getting that 2024 is going to be barren? It's not.
I didn't say that. I said it was going to be, well, I said there wasn't going to be like, as far as the big friends that people expect, they've already said that's not happening. We can still get big games coming this year from either
okay,
new IPs and third party.
What are the big franchises people are expecting?
From Sony, they would expect something like God of War. Obviously, that's not happening because we just got Valhalla. We're not getting a new Spider-Man because we just got a new Spider-Man.
Exactly.
We just got for Horizon. Horizon for this, we didn't just get, but it did recently get its like DLC as of last year.
Exactly.
So obviously, we're not getting that. So these new franchises, you know, and that should be expected. That should
exactly.
Be
expected. Like that. That's the point I'm trying to make. Is like you're saying it as if it is something to be concerned about. However. Why is it something to be concerned about when we know it's not coming because we just got this stuff?
It's because the timing of these announcements, I think, is the concern here. Because like I just said, they all just came out. That's why 2023 was such a stacked year, because we did get that Horizon DLC at the beginning of the year. We did get that DLC for God of War at the end of the year. Spider-Man 2 came out. Like, they all came out in 2023. So we ended up having if you like game releases, just like all in that year. And then we have, you know, the big franchise that are not coming out this year because they all just came out. You know, Last of Us Part 2's remaster also came out this year. They're obviously not going to have a new Last of Us game either. That's another franchise I would put into that box as well because it just got that release. So it is. I fully admit that it is just a matter of the timing of it. But there are other Sony franchises out there that may not be expected as much, but could fill that gulf that would flit into the double A or single A. That don't exist anymore, really.
Because remember, Until Dawn was, and still is, unless I'm wrong, a PlayStation exclusive.
Yeah, and it's getting that remastered this year.
So I don't want to put that... I say all of this to say, because when I was listening to you, it sounded like you were saying that there is only room for, you know, those... Which, you're not wrong, but, like... There's only room for those PlayStation middle ground games, but I don't want anyone listening to think that that's all PlayStation is getting. So I wanted to be very clear that it's like not the case, because the way that you explained it very much sounded like all we're getting from PlayStation until next year are these like middle of the road, single A titles. And that's not true.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that we're not getting that. I'm saying that we're like that Sony doesn't have like if, on the Sony first party side, that just doesn't seem to be something they're interested anymore in making the single A, double A games. It's pretty much like what you're getting on Sony is going to be AAA experiences from third parties or AAA experiences that are from new IPs like Rise of the Ronin or AAA experiences that are remakes like Last of Us Part 2 Remastered and the Until Dawn remake that's coming out. But there doesn't seem to be middle of the line games coming out this year is my point. If you're getting anything lower than AAA, it's gonna be on the indie side.
Yeah, and that, and I think that I think that this just doesn't change anything from the past. Like, we're gonna all be playing Stellar Blade when it comes out. That is gonna
Damn,
be a huge
right
game.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's gonna be a huge game.
You know what I mean?
I have never regretted saying something so much on this podcast that I did just right now. Oh my god! Why did you have to make the animations with your hands and everything? That was over the top. But yeah, we're getting Rise of the Ronin. We're getting We're getting that other game that I'm no longer going to announce. So I don't think this is really anything to be concerned about. Personally. There's a shit ton of other games to play.
For me, at least, you know, it's just, I'm not going to say weird, but it's like, it's kind of that return to normalcy of, you know, we're not getting the big heavy hitters back to back frequently. Like that's why I asked, you know, is the COVID schedule caught up? Because now we're kind of easing back into, you know, we're not going to push all our big games at you at once anymore. It's kind of like, hey, from this moment till this next moment in 2025, don't expect the biggest names we have. We're taking a break from those. We're still going to be pumping out our big names. Like you said, Until Dawn is one of them. But you know, it's not going to be, again, it's not going to be our biggest names.
I guess it's just like, I guess it just feels like this is an outlier. Like this is like 2023 was an outlier. Like we got a lot of PlayStation really big titles at once, something that we don't usually get, because what was the time frame between God of War and God of War Ragnarok? Like what was the time? 4 years. That's since the release of the PlayStation. What, you know, look at the time frame of Spider-Man and then Spider-Man 2, right? Like these are a couple of years between these games, so this isn't new. I guess my point is, this isn't new. We already have a stacked 2024 between, if I'm just talking about JRPGs, between Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, and Persona 3 Reload, like all available to play on PlayStation or coming out soon. Like I've already mentioned Stellar Blade coming up. Like I just don't think it's any different from the years in between the games, right? Like the only difference is that, like, maybe God of War, if God of War wasn't coming out, maybe we would be getting Spider-Man. All they're saying is they're not going to be, consecutive this time. Like, I just don't think it's any different than any other year, basically. I think the biggest thing to worry about, honestly, was them working and developing on live service games. I feel like that's the real big takeaway from this, as opposed to, like, you guys aren't going to get any heavy hitters this year from PlayStation, which, fine, because there have been lots of years where we don't. So, like, to me, that's not the conversation, because the year is going to be stacked, even if we don't know what's coming. It's literally February, and there's like 300-hour games on the horizon by the end of February, and then Stellar Blade's coming. So it's like and Condor and Until Dawn. So I feel like I don't want the conversation to kind of sound like PlayStation's not gonna have anything, when it should be, damn, PlayStation's doing this live service bullshit. But yeah, that's it.
I like those choice of words.
Cause it is live service bullshit. Like Foam Stars, free to play. Why the fuck is the battle pass ridiculous? Like the amount of money that goes into whatever.
How much is a battle pass?
I think it's $25, but it was something really weird. Like I think you could buy the battle pass for like $15, but like you could pay $20 for a single skin. It was really fucking weird. I have to look it up.
In Home Stars?
Yeah.
I saw this. I thought the season pass was like only like $6.
I think it's like $5 or $6, but then like the actual like character stuff is like $15-$20, and people were like, what the fuck?
Oh, okay.
Because I could be wrong. I could be wrong, but I think it is like $5 or $6 for the season pass, but then like character individual purchases are like double that price or some shit.
Okay. Interesting.
Now I'm gonna look it up, because I don't want to be just like talking shit. But anyway, that's it.
That's it?
Yep, that's it.
I like how the main character of Foam Stars, her name is Soa. It's like soap, but without the P, so it's just Soa.
Oh my god. So did you guys hear about how the characters in Foam Stars excrete foam from their skin? And the foam is like urine or some shit?
That's disgusting. Okay.
Yeah, there are some things you just shouldn't know.
I didn't know about that last part. I knew about the they generated the foam. That part I knew because people like to talk about games. But
there's people like to talk about games.
Yeah, you know, like us, we're doing a podcast on talking about games, so you know, I guess people like to hear that stuff. Thank y'all for listening, by the way. If you're a listener, shout out to you. You're a real one.
I'm gonna have to turn on Foam Stars and see the price of the individual items. But yes, the season pass is like $6. But I'm gonna come back next week and talk shit about those items. Good night, everybody.
Oh, okay. Bye. Podcast's over. Again, thank y'all for listening. Bye.